Hello, I'm Kevin Moore, and you're now listening to The Moore Show. For the next hour, I'll cover subjects of an alternative variety that most shows do not touch. On today's show, I'm joined with UFO researcher Timothy Good, where we'll be discussing UFOs and cover-ups. So stay tuned, enjoy, and I'll be right back.
Mr. Show or a guest, want to know more about The Moore Show and upcoming guests? Then log on to www.themoreshow.co.uk. Listening to The Moore Show, and here's your host, Kevin Moore.
Welcome back to the show. We're about to be joined with our guest, Timothy Good. Well, here's just a bit of background on Timothy. He has conducted worldwide research on the UFO phenomena, including interviewing key witnesses and discussing the subject with astronauts, military and intelligence specialists, pilots, politicians and scientists. He has lectured at universities, schools and many other organizations. He has even been invited for discussion at the Pentagon in 1998, and at the headquarters for the French Air Force in 2002. He has acted as consultant for several US congressional investigations. Born in London, Timothy gained his scholarship as a violinist to the Royal Academy of Music. He has also freelanced as a session player for television dramas, commercials, feature films, and recording with pop musicians. For example, Phil Collins, George Harrison, Elton John, Paul McCartney, Rod Stewart, and U2. Timothy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, Timothy, you've written some great books on ufology, on the subject of ufology. How did you get into the subject of UFOs? I mean, what sparked your interest?
Well, it goes back to 1955 when a cousin, an American cousin, knowing of my passion for aviation and space travel, started talking about flying saucers. And he said, Timothy, do you know about flying saucers? And I said, no. And he said, well, you ought to, because of your interest in airplanes and rockets. And so he sent me The Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe, which immediately got me hooked. because here were reports by highly qualified people such as military and civilian pilots, nearly always corroborated by radar and air traffic controllers, of course. So that was really what got me going on the path.
Okay. Now, the UK has closed down its UFO reporting office as of this year, I believe. I guess the government doesn't see it as a threat to UK airspace, but there's no proof of that, is there?
Well, I mean, quite frankly, it doesn't matter at all, because that outfit, that civil defence outfit in the Ministry of Defence, was just a public relations job, really, to appease sort of inquiries, so that members of the public could, you know, feel that they could report their sightings to someone who would be interested and who could log them. But it really makes not the slightest bit of difference, because most people don't actually bother about calling the Ministry of Defence. They'll call the media. They'll call their local newspaper, or they'll call the police. The police, of course, have instructions to pass on sightings from the public to the MOD in any event. But it doesn't matter, because behind the scenes, in great secrecy, investigations are continuing. There's Royal Air Force Intelligence, there's the Royal Air Force Provost and Security Services, who've always had an interest in this. And as I proved in my first book, Above top secret investigations were going on to the extent that in 1978, £11 million was spent in that just one year researching the subject. And that's got nothing to do with that unit in the Ministry of Defence. And there's others, naval intelligence, I'm quite sure. They've never released anything. Army. And there's all kinds of stuff going on that we simply don't know about, and we're not going to find out about for a very long time.
So the UK's just released its UFO files, but do you believe there's more sensitive files at cases out there still?
Well, yes. I mean, it's interesting that I noticed, I think it's about four times now, that the MOD has released thousands of pages at a time, usually, of previously classified documents detailing sightings, mostly from members of the public and police and so forth. But hardly any of those in the last few years, at any rate, that they've released were classified higher than confidential, despite banner headlines, top secret files revealed at last. To the best of my knowledge, apart from that, the Condyne report, which was a very recent thing, actually, that was released in part by the Ministry of Defence about 3 or 4 years ago, and that had been classified secret, UK eyes only.
Yeah.
Most of it, and I got a few bits more under Freedom of Information Act, but the fact remains that of those thousands and thousands of pages that have been released through the National Archives, nearly all of them are just confidential, and they're not really very exciting. There are one or two very good cases, I have to say. I was amazed, for example, to see top secret files released at last, you know, and quite a lot of local newspapers said that, and they were actually my own cases, my own reports, which I'd filed with the MOD, just for the record. And the only reason that they were classified at all, classified confidential, was because they don't release witnesses' names. So it's, you know, it's all overhyped, and it's a way of sort of dealing with the flood of Freedom of Information requests which the Ministry of Defence gets regarding this subject, more than any other subject, apparently. And they don't want to be inundated, so they're just releasing tons of stuff.
Sure.
All the time.
Sure. So in your opinion, Timothy, would you say that the British Secret Service and military know about the existence of UFOs? And if so, how much information is shared with the Americans and other countries?
Well, the Americans are in control, for starters. I was told that by a deputy director of MI6 many, many, many years ago. The Americans are in control, and they've even sort of been in Ministry of Defense Operations Room back in the 50s, collaborating with their British counterparts. And I'm talking about CIA and mostly CIA and US Air Force intelligence, collaborating with Royal Air Force intelligence and so forth on the subject.
Right, okay. So would you say that our current government may be kept out of the loop as well?
Oh, sure. I mean, politicians are the last people to find out unless there's a specific need to know, which does happen occasionally, like Churchill was told a few things. But if you remember back in the 50s, I mean, at the height of the sightings in the summer of 1952, Churchill demanded of his air staff, well, you know, what on earth's going on? What does this all amount to? Let me know. And they said, don't worry, Prime Minister. They came back a few weeks later and said, don't worry, it's all been explained. We've been in touch with the Americans, and you know, 90% or whatever reports are all explainable, and the unexplainable ones are not related to flying saucers and so forth. So Churchill's mind was apparently set at rest. And that was at a time when they were, the Brits were, well, they'd had the Flying Saucer Working Party, which ran from 1950 to 1951. That was actually, a lot of that stuff was top secret. And that was, I don't know if Churchill knew about that. I doubt it, quite frankly, at that time.
So you don't think the current Prime Minister has any knowledge?
No, he wouldn't. He wouldn't.
Okay.
Not unless there is a, you know, there would be a specific need to know. And I think the same in the United States, a few presidents have certainly been briefed on various aspects of the subject. They're probably certainly not told everything. They're just told what they need to know.
So sort of like compartmentalized in a sense.
Absolutely compartmentalized. Sensitive, compartmented information it is, which is just based purely on a need to know.
I mean, do you think that if the information was released, it would put the world in a tilt and sort of cause mass panic?
Yes, I do. I think, it depends what they said, of course. And there's no way, based on what I know, there's no way they can come up with all this information. I mean, if even us UFO researchers think how long it took us to sort of begin to accept the possibility of alien abductions. Now, supposing you come out in some sensational comment to the public about all that, you know, yes, sure, people have been abducted, we think they're hybridizing human beings and so forth, and some of them want to take over this planet. You know, there's no way they're going to come out with all that. They might come out with something more bland.
Do you think there's a sort of group outside the elected UK government with knowledge of I suppose extraterrestrial presence?
No question about it.
What would that the agenda of such a group?
Well, I would imagine they're liaising very closely with the Americans, for starters. That's what I've been told. And there would be scientific and technical intelligence people, just as they employ in the Royal Air Force intelligence and other intelligence agencies, including MI6 and so forth. Gathering as much technical scientific intelligence as they can about the craft and other aspects, and that's been going on for a very, very long time.
So why would you say, in your opinion, are people not talking or sort of coming forward with what they know?
Well, they are. People from all over the world, more and more people are coming forward. If you think, for example, of Sir Peter Horsley, Air Marshal Sir Peter Horsley, whom I knew back in 1954, and this is what initially he wrote in his autobiography decades later, he claims to have had a two-hour meeting with an extraterrestrial being in the middle of London, which was arranged for him via a British Army general. And I wrote about that in my book, Alien Base, and Sir Peter wrote, of course, originally about that in his autobiography, Sounds from Another Room. And at that time, he was actually equerry, military attaché to the to Prince Philip, and to a lesser extent to the Queen, for a period of 7 years at Buckingham Palace, when he had that two-hour meeting with a human appearing extraterrestrial in the middle of London. And he went back to the palace and reported all the details to Prince Philip, who's always had a strong interest in this subject. So he came out with it, and he's one of the most high-ranking people to come out with it. And, of course, back in the States, you have Lieutenant Colonel Philip Corso, who headed the United States Army's Foreign Technology Desk, and together with General Trudeau at the Pentagon, starting in about 1961, they started feeding in actual items of materials recovered from crashed flying saucers to the U.S. Industrial giants and corporations, which greatly accelerated America's already big technological lead over the rest of the world.
Yes, I've heard that.
So he came out with that, and he was ridiculed. People have discredited him. I've even heard UFO researchers trying to discredit him, but he has an impeccable background, and he worked actually for the Special Coordinations Board on the Operations Board of the National Security Council, which was it's called the Special Group, which lasted for quite a number of years within the national the intelligence office section of the National Security Council, and Corso was certainly on that because I got his military records, and those were the people that dealt with the most sensitive operations run by the United States government.
Yes, you're referring to Philip Corso, the author of The Day After Roswell.
Indeed, yes.
Yeah, and you don't think he was a disinformant? You think he was the real key?
I do.
Okay. Well, just going back there to, I believe, Sir Peter Halsey that you mentioned.
Yes.
When you say that he met an extraterrestrial, are you saying that it was the normal sort of big eyes, big head?
No. This is the thing. There are many, many different types of extraterrestrial. I have to say they're all humanoid, but there are big varieties. There are big differences among them. Certainly the so-called grey, you know, with the bug eyes and short, spindly figure and so forth is very popular, but there have been many much more human types that have been observed over the years, and the man that Sir Peter met looked perfectly normal in most respects. He was immaculately dressed in a suit, and they met in this Chelsea home with a witness present. And what Sir Peter found particularly disturbing was that this alien could read Sir Peter's mind completely. Furthermore, and he didn't publish this in his book for obvious reasons, but he told me, and I published it in my last book, Need to Know, that this alien knew all Britain's top secret nuclear secrets. So that was kind of disturbing. And so he went back to the palace and related all this to Prince Philip, who, of course, had a very open mind.
Okay. Well, we're going to come back to some of the things we're just talking about here, but I just want to go back to a previous question. Well, a question which is about SETI. Now, if what you're saying is true, and you've written many books and much back up in those books to prove these are true, why would SETI lie about that there's no presence among us? I mean, what are they there for?
Well, many people involved in SETI are ignorant because they haven't studied the subject. But in any case, you know, very little money is appropriated to the SETI program, quite frankly. I visited the Arecibo radio telescope in Puerto Rico, where the curator there explained that a fraction of their time, the radio telescope's time, was spent on SETI, and the U.S. military, in fact, appropriated most of the time for use of that radio telescope.
Right.
And, of course, Puerto Rico being a central operations area for aliens, it's particularly sort of ironic, I think, that they had a SETI program there.
Yeah, one of the questions I wanted to ask you, Timothy, was why are you allowed to write the books that you've done? I mean, there must be a process of sort of maybe trickling information out rather than the government having to sort of tell their truth.
Yes. I mean,
do you think you've been part of that process?
Yes, I have, indirectly. I think what I do is appreciated by certain people in who work in certain places, because they want some of this information to come out on the one hand, and they're well aware that of the dangers of something, some event triggering a, I don't know, like a mass sighting or something, and they're going to have to tell the public something. So the better educated we are, the better. There are other people, unfortunately, who think we're not entitled to know anything at all, which I think is a grave mistake.
Yeah, I mean, have you ever felt in danger or intimidated?
To an extent, yes, I have. I was in the States, for example, in the 1970s when two U.S. government cars were near my hotel room, and I came back from lunch, and someone had been in the room, and I got expensive camera and long lens and stuff on the bed I'd left there. That was fine, but my research notes had been taken.
Right.
Things like that.
Yeah. And have you ever made contact with an extraterrestrial such?
Yes, on several occasions. I believe I have. The first was in 1963. The second was in 1967, when I was in New York with the London Symphony Orchestra at that time. We had a series of concerts at the Carnegie Hall, and I'd met people who claimed that certain aliens were actually liaising with some scientific people, NASA, for example, and some government people, and military, and so forth, and that they were actually assisting us in the space program, and that these people were highly telepathic, as Sir Peter Horsley found out. And I conducted an experiment in the lobby of what was then the Park Sheraton Hotel. I'd heard a lot about these people. I knew how some of them appeared. And I sent out some thoughts. I said, look, if any of you guys in the New York area, please, you know, come and sit down next to me. I was in this hotel lobby. Come and sit down next to me and prove it. Well, about half an hour went by. I just thought that in my mind. I projected the thought, and then I relaxed, and I read a magazine on the sofa in the lobby. And after about half an hour, a man came in. The Americans would say, straight out of Madison Avenue, immaculately dressed in a dark suit, white shirt, dark tie. He had wavy, sandy hair. He was tanned. He had glasses. And he came down, he came and sat beside me, and he had an attaché case with him, from which he slowly opened it up, pulled out the New York Times, and laid it before him, and he just turned the pages over, you know, in a very short space of time, actually, and then folded the newspaper and put it back in his attaché case. And so I thought, right. In my mind, I sent him the thought, okay, if you're the guy I'm looking for, if you're from another world working here, take your right index finger and hold it to the right side of your nose. And instantly I thought that he did precisely that, and he kept it there. So at that point, eventually he put his finger down. I thought, well, what do I do now? And I don't know, but I just didn't feel I should speak. I thought he would tell me stuff. He didn't. There was nothing at all. But eventually, he got up and he just looked at me very seriously, not unpleasantly, and then he walked away. But I'd recognise him if I saw him again.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty incredible, actually. Yeah. Whether that was just as far as the experience was meant to go, just to put a sort of a breadcrumb in your sort of head, maybe.
I think so. But you know, it was kind of cathartic for me. It was the proof I'd asked for, and that's what I got.
Right, okay. And do you think there's a sort of genetic connection to some of these species out there? I mean,
they all say that we are genetically related to them. Some of them are millions of years ahead of us on the human evolutionary scale. Others may well be behind us. They all say that they colonized this Earth. They colonized the solar system. They came initially to Mars and Venus, just the high ground areas of Venus, apparently, and they established bases there and on Mars. But then Mars lost its atmosphere, and they came to Earth, and they interbred with us, I believe, at the Cro-Magnon stage around that time. So genetically, the humans on planet Earth were sort of sped up. So we are definitely related. And some of them look extremely similar to us. I have to say, from my own experience, I mean, unless you knew certain things to look for, you probably might not recognize them. And it, generally speaking, it's their demeanor and the fact that they're highly telepathic, and that's the proof.
Okay. With abductions, then, I know we're sort of swimming all over the place here, but there's so many questions I've got for you in such a short amount of time. With the abduction purpose, then, have they got our best interest at mind when they're abducting? And is the abduction a real phenomena?
It is indeed. There have been reports from all over the world. It's important to stress that there are different abductors. It's not just these little grey guys. Some of the more human types, looking types, have been responsible for abductions, as the literature reveals. And I've spoken to people who've been abducted by you know, a number of different types of humanoid aliens. But the aliens themselves say that the purpose is to extract genetic material and to extract sperm and ova to produce a crossbreed, a hybrid, if you like. And this, there has been an operation going on for quite a long time in that regard, I'm led to believe, by informed sources. Now, the aliens say they're doing it for our benefit, but my information is that in many cases it's being done for their benefit. As to the precise reasons, I can't be absolutely sure. I was told that certainly one reason is that some of these beings have their BDI on this planet of manipulating the human race. Now, whether some people might think that's a good thing, you know, they couldn't be any worse than we are, but I don't know. Earth is unique. I mean, we hear that from astrophysicists all
that's
the
right.
time, and actually, aliens themselves say, well, of course, Earth is not unique in the universe, and it's not even unique in the galaxy, but it is very special in this neck of the woods. There's no other planet that has such a variety of biodiversity, if you like, of phenomenal variety in flora and fauna and species. And also, we have so much water. We have these fantastic oceans, which they use, by the way. Some of them have bases, have established huge bases. I'm told by very reliable sources that some of them have giant bases and giant craft in the Pacific Ocean, for example, and other oceans around our planet. And indeed in some countries, certain areas. And this is very reliable information. And this has been known for a very, very long time. And there has been quite a degree of liaison with some of these beings. And if the people I've been talking to are to be believed, there's a conflict of interest involving the future of planet Earth, because there are some people who want to take over and grab what they can and what they need, and there are other people who are trying to help us, but at the same time they themselves also require things on this planet, which is why they have established bases here.
Okay, Tim, we're going to take a break there, so stay tuned and we'll be right back.
To connect with the show, email kevin@themoreshow.co.uk. Listening to The Moore Show, and here's your host, Kevin Moore.
Welcome back. I'm joined with Timothy Good. Now, Timothy, getting back to where we last left off, in your view, what is the purpose of hybridization and the abductions?
Well, one theory that, I like to think it's not true, but apparently the aliens told the military people they were liaising with that the purpose of the abductions was for the purpose of pacifying the human race, making them less violent, because this was our main problem. I think we can all agree on that. But in fact, what their agenda is to make us more acquiescent so that they will receive very little opposition if and when they decide to take over the planet. I mean, it all sounds rather like science fiction, I think you agree.
It does, yeah.
But there could well be a grain of truth. I know that the abduction scenario is quite a disturbing one.
Yeah.
If you read some of the cases, there's a lot of frauds out there, but, of course, but I think probably tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people have been abducted.
Sure, but and this hybridization, this is just one particular species that's working on this? Because you mentioned there was many.
No, but in the case of the ones that making us more acquiescent, I think that there is one main one, yes.
Okay, okay. Yeah. And are these extraterrestrials, are they highly evolved spiritual beings, some of them?
Some of them, it's a good question, Kevin. Some of them are extremely evolved. are perhaps millions of, well, I would say definitely millions of years ahead of us on the spiritual side. And there's a lot of information that one can read about that. You can even read about it online. There's an extraordinary group, for example, that that started in Italy in 1956. And they were given the name the Amicizia Group, meaning friendship group, and they established contacts with many high-ranking individuals and many ordinary human beings. They were all hand-picked, and this lasted for a very long time, several decades, in fact. And there's a lot about that. If you look up that on the website, you can see a lot of information, and I know some of the people who were involved in that group, and they had face-to-face meetings, ongoing meetings for a long time with some of these people. And these were people from many different walks of life, you know, from there's one diplomat who was involved, a very well-known diplomat, Italian diplomat. There were many lawyers involved. There were all kinds of people from all walks of life, and they were definitely trying to help humanity.
And if there's sort of...
And still are, I would think.
Sure. If there's sort of good beings out there as such, there must be the opposite, as surely.
Goodies and baddies, absolutely. Mm. There are others, definitely, who do not have our best interests at heart, and all of them have said that, and it's not just something that's... you know, hearsay and tittle-tattle, I don't think, but it's consistently reported by people claiming contact with these beings.
Now, a lot of what we've said so far, it's sort of sure chucks Darwin's theory out the window.
Not entirely, because...
No?
No. Because, you know, we did certainly come originally from the ape family. But the only difference is, and Darwin couldn't have known this, I don't think, and I think DNA actually in the long run will show it up, is that at some point we were interfered with, which was when they began to interbreed with us and hybridize us way back, you know, around or before the time of Cro-Magnon man.
I see. Okay. I mean, how about sort of alien... descriptions in the Bible, then? I mean,
well, heavens above, there's you know, there's so much material. If you go back to Genesis, for example, it's very interesting. You can sort of read the Bible and other religious documents. You know, I believe the Hindu Vedas have references to the gods. Certainly, the Greeks do. You know, they talk about the gods who came to Earth. And the Brahmin records, and the Bible, right from the start, you know, in the sixth chapter of Genesis, you know, and it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the ground and daughters were born unto them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were fair, and took them wives of all that they chose. And it says there were giants on the earth in those days, and also after that when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them. So that, I think that's very interesting. And you have all the descriptions of so-called angels, which doesn't mean someone with a pair of wings sprouting from their shoulders. I mean, it means a messenger from Angelos, the Greek.
Sure.
And there's all sorts of things, you know... Elijah was taken up to heaven in a whirlwind, and that's described. And Ezekiel talks about a whirlwind coming out of the north, and brightness was all about it. Midst of fire, also out of the midst thereof, came the likeness of four living creatures, and this was their appearance. They had the likeness of a man. And it goes on and on, people describing things in the sky. But I think the New Testament is equally interesting. It talks about Angel Gabriel, talking about the, you know, the virgin birth and everything. And I think Gabriel, as a messenger could well have been from elsewhere, and there was some type of sort of artificial insemination.
Right, okay.
Jesus himself had highly telepathic abilities. He could apparently levitate.
That's true.
Curing the sick, and of course the resurrection, all that. And for me, one of the most interesting things is, I think it's in the Book of Acts. Well, I've got some of this in front of me now. And when he had spoken these things, while they beheld, he was taken up, and a cloud received him out of their sight. And while they looked steadfastly toward heaven as he went up, behold, two men stood by them in white apparel. Quite interesting, I think. And then I think was it Saul's journey to Damascus, when they had this brilliant light in the heavens, and Saul fell on the ground, and a voice said, "Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou?" And it was Jesus talking from this brilliant light in the sky. And I think that's very interesting.
Why would you say, Tim, that most of us in our lifetime probably won't see a UFO?
Yeah, I myself share the same frustration. I mean, I see something I can't explain, like every 10 years, on average, I would say. Maybe that's because I know what the explainable ones are. I mean, if you think nearly all the reports can be explained, this country, I can tell you, in the last few years has been inundated with UFO reports. I subscribe to a press clipping agency, so I get these things all the
yes.
time. And nearly all the site reports in the last few years have been of these Chinese lanterns, which have proliferated length and breadth of the United Kingdom, and they are nearly 3 feet high. You could light them. They've got sort of apparently uninflammable paper, so on a frame, and you light a sort of wax thing at the bottom there, and they go up, and they can go up for quite a while sometimes, and up to you know well beyond 1,000 feet sometimes, and they look absolutely spectacular. And every week, in the cuttings come in all from local press, sometimes nationals, of people reporting these orange lights in the sky. They are Chinese lanterns, which can be bought at toy shops, and they're much cheaper online. And people launch them typically by the squadron. You know, you get up to a dozen or more of these things. And I don't know if you've ever seen them where you are, but weekends are very popular, particularly popular. They're usually to celebrate weddings.
Yeah.
Things like that, you know, but people just do them for the hell of it.
Well, let's.
So it is frustrating. I'm sorry to interrupt. It is frustrating for people that, you know, that there aren't more of the genuine things to be seen. But a lot of people have been reporting genuine cases of these extraordinary flying triangles, which have been seen particularly in the Midlands and in Wales. And there were some very good ones in 2008, and I think some in 2009 as well. And they're all over the world. Now, the problem here is that I know for a fact that the Americans, and possibly to a lesser extent the Brits, have actually produced highly sophisticated craft which are capable of space travel. And they're advanced beyond anything that's even, you know, still probably top secret. There are still some that are even beyond top secret. And some of them have been flying for quite a long time, and some of those we see occasionally. I'm absolutely convinced of it. Now, if you think of Ben Rich, the great designer and engineer who was responsible for the stealth project, at Lockheed Martin Skunk Works, he said in the presence of two friends of mine, one was an executive officer of one of the big companies in the States, IBM actually, and at the University of California in Los Angeles, at a meeting of the engineering department, Ben Rich 1993, gave a presentation. And the last slide he showed was of a flying saucer zipping off into space. He said, "I can't discuss more classified projects after this." But some students and these friends of mine were not students. They were at this IBM meeting. They told me that Ben Rich said, "We now have the technology to go to the stars." This was what he was saying. He was revealing to this small private group after his presentation. He said, "We now know how to travel among the stars. We now have the technology. We found the missing equations. We now," and this was in 1993, "we now have the means of flying among the stars." And he said, "This technology is locked up in highly classified black budget programs, and it would take an act of God," he said, "to get this stuff out to benefit humanity in general." So there you have it from someone really who should know, and he's absolutely right. So just to confuse the whole issue of UFOs, some of highly advanced spacecraft are probably being flown or otherwise controlled by Americans, or maybe in some cases British pilots.
Now, from your book, Unearthly Disclosure, you talk in that book, and I've read part of it, about the bases all over the planet.
Yes.
Now, obviously you can't find these bases on Google.
I can tell you where some of them are, or at least qualify that.
Sure.
Kevin, say where some of them were, because this information dates back to the late 1980s. There were two large ones in the Pacific Ocean. Some of them are in very deep trenches, like the Marianas Trench, which goes down to 11,000 meters, and others are on sort of different parts of what are called sea mounts.
Okay.
Like these huge giant escarpments, or whatever you'd call
yes.
them, under ocean, you know, old flattened mountains or something under our oceans. And others are underground in mountains. According to this Amicizia group, they established a huge base which went to a depth of about 12 kilometers or more. And some of them have tunnel or buried themselves further than that. They have such a technology that it's not, you know, they can deal with matter very, very effectively with highly advanced technology. And
so it's not really about them coming from above. They're already here.
Yeah. Well, there are still extraterrestrials. There's many different types. There's still, you know, some from elsewhere coming here, visiting, whatever, on vacation, or,
but
students in a gap year. I mean, the sky's open. Our planet is very attractive from the outside, at any rate. It's just that a lot of them are not so keen on a lot of the people here, and I can't say I blame them there.
Well, surely if there's bases on the Earth, then there must be bases on the Moon or Mars?
Yes, there are on both. Glad you raised that. And, of course, we are, NASA is collaborating with some of these people. That's my understanding.
Yes, but, I mean, the pictures from NASA never say so. I mean, I've never seen a picture.
Of course they don't, because they can't come out with it.
So they're in the loop too, basically, with the government.
I mean, you know,
yeah.
there were aliens on the moon when Armstrong and the others landed there. Even Buzz Aldrin has admitted recently, well, a few years ago, and he stated it several times on television, that they were accompanied on their way to the moon by a bell-shaped flying craft, which concerned them. And I learned from a lady now deceased, who was with MI6 many, many years ago, and she met Armstrong at a NASA conference at which she was actually one of the speakers. And she told me that in conversation with Neil Armstrong, he said there were definitely craft on the moon when we landed, and we were very frightened.
Okay.
And they got the distinct message, maybe literally, I don't know, that they were not welcome, that we were not welcome on the moon.
Yeah,
and this is the reason the Apollo program, it had to go on.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say.
The reason it stopped for such a long time.
Yes, because we've not been back for what now, 30 years?
Something like that.
Yeah. So you don't see us going back anytime just soon?
Yes, I do, actually. I think there's collaboration between some of our more friendly brethren from elsewhere with our space program. And we're getting some assistance. There's all sorts of new weaponry involved now in this, according to my understanding, which is quite disturbing in a way, because, you know, we're talking about Star Wars here, or possible confrontations.
Us against them?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think also there is a conflict of interest among these races here on Earth, and this has been confirmed for me by a number of different military and scientific sources. Some people who have witnessed this at first hand, that there is a conflict of interest over planet Earth, and to some extent we are sort of piggy in the middle.
But how much longer can they keep this lie going?
I haven't a clue. I mean, there's no way they can sit on it forever, and I believe that's acknowledged behind the scenes, but I don't know.
Well, if the subject is so true, why is it so ridiculed, yet featured in so many movies regularly, and TV adverts?
Yes, I know. It's very clever, isn't it? This was planned going way back to 1953 when the CIA, and I know the guy who's actually responsible for this, and he's very elderly now, but he was in charge of this so-called Robertson panel, which advised the government on how to debunk the subject. And even though, of course, as he knew perfectly well that it was all real and happening, and they just wanted to take wind out of the sails of this fantastic flying saucer epidemic that was going on in the 1950s. And so they devised a plan of doing sort of comic strip things and joking about it, and all sorts of things were tried just to sort of to ridicule it. And even in 1960, the first head of the newly constituted CIA, Admiral Hillencutter, said in a statement read out to Congress that, look, you know, behind the scenes, Air Force officers are soberly concerned about these UFOs, but through official secrecy and ridicule, many citizens are led to believe the unknown objects are nonsense. So there's the head of the CIA confirming official ridicule. It's very effective. It's a very effective weapon.
Very effective, yeah. I mean, it's in the psyche. It's part of the culture now, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, it's conspiracy theory. People say, conspiracy theory. Oh, he's a conspiracy theorist. I mean, do they think there really aren't conspiracy theories? I mean, heavens above.
Sure. I mean, the other reverse of conspiracy, let's look at disinformants.
Yes.
Do you believe in purposeful disinformants out there?
Oh, absolutely. It's absolutely essential to deflate, you know, to sort of play everything down. I don't blame them. I really don't. I can see it from their point of view, and I don't know everything, but some of these guys, you know, from what I've been led to believe, some of it's pretty alarming what's going on. So you wouldn't want to unnecessarily upset the populace.
Yeah.
But I think we have to be prepared. We have to be conditioned, and maybe conditioning is part of it.
Do you think they know they're disinformants?